When you listen to the Ron Van Dam Show, he probably seems like the kind of guy you'd like to sit down and have a beer with. Except he's chronically antisocial, and beer makes him gassy. So it's probably better to just keep admiring him from a distance. You're listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Oh, right, fine, good.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I've got a doozy for you today. I don't know what a doozy is. It's a stupid word, but I have one for you. All right, I'm going to get right to it. Today's episode is not going to be an incredible, wonderfully hilarious comedy program as I usually churn out like butter. Today's show involves some topics that kind of are interesting to our society. We have an interesting guest coming up with an extended interview a little bit later in the program. It's the psychology of poverty. What? Sounds interesting, but I don't quite understand. I know, you will. That's coming up a little bit later. Yeah, on yesterday's show, I did a thing about receiving a letter from the March of Dimes requesting me to donate to them, which I had no problem to do in the past. I have a problem now because what they did was they sent me two quarters in the mail. If you remember yesterday's episode, it was exciting. They sent me two quarters in the mail, shiny new quarters, by the way, and then asked for a donation. And my response was, if you just didn't send 50 cents to like 20 million people, you'd be able to do all your research and get all your money. Why are you giving away this kind of money and then asking for money? That bothered me. And it was done to make me feel guilty. Quite obviously, that is donation by manipulation. And don't do that. Ron, don't play those reindeer games. Well, yesterday afternoon, I received an envelope in the mail. It was a solicitation, but it said on the envelope, do not discard live cashable check enclosed. What human being wouldn't check that out? I mean, I didn't know who it was from at that point. I open it up. It was from Washington, D.C. I figured, they're sending me checks again, and I'll happily cash them because I'm just getting my money back is what I'm doing. Now, inside, there was a check, and it said on the check, and it's a live check, it's real, and it says, to the order or bearer, I'm a bearer, Mr. Ron Van Dam, it has my address, and the check is in the amount of $1.95. Okay, here we go, right? $1.95, a check for $1.95. I didn't even know that was legal to do that. And then there's a letter attached, and it says, Dear Mr. Van Dam, and that's me. It says, and I'm going to read it exactly what it says. I've attached a $1.95 check made payable to you. Believe me, sending checks out is the last thing I wanted to do. But our 2022 annual fundraiser is the single most important fundraiser of the year to support our fight against cancer. That's why I've sent you the attached check for $1.95 to grab your attention and hopefully convince you to return the $1.95 check to us along with your own donation check for $10 or more. Your gift of $10 or more to National Cancer Research Center will support our critical cutting-edge laboratory research and cancer education programs. Remember, the more than 550,000 Americans will die from cancer this year alone, and that 3 out of every 4 American families will eventually be touched by cancer. The $1.95 check is real. You can put this letter aside, cash the check, and forget all about our important laboratory research and national cancer education programs. But what I really hope you do is return the $1.95 check along with your own gift of $10 or more to help in our fight against cancer. As you can imagine, whether you send a $10 check or not, it is really important that I know your decision is regarding the $1.95 check I attached. So please check the yes or no box on the attached reply form and return the form today. Stephen L. Blumenthal, Vice President. Okay, at least it was explained in a letter what the hell they're doing sending me a check for $1.95. Now the ball's in my court. And the question is, how guilty do you think you made me feel? Did I say field? How guilty do you think you made me feel? Wrong word at the end of the sentence. Well, the answer for me is not guilty at all. Am I going to send a $1.95 check back? No. Am I going to cash it? No. If I send the check back, then I'm on your live list as being alive and responsive. I don't want to be that. I'm going to make believe this never happened. No, I'm not going to go to the bank and cash your check for $1.95. I'm not an asshole, at least not in that regard. I'm going to tear the check up like it never existed, like I never got this thing. Am I going to send you any more money? No. No. Stop it. Just stop it. I sent you some money not long ago, I'd say about a year ago, and that was nice. It was nice of me. Leave me alone. Or just ask me for more in a letter. That's okay. You can do that. But don't send me a check for $1.95 and start playing with me. I do appreciate the full letter of explanation. That's more than a March of Dimes did. But still, come on, man. Yeah, I mean, I donate to the Cancer Fund because that is a serious, serious situation. Every family is touched by it, whether personally or family member, indeed. I mean, yeah, yes. And I will donate, but not like this. Not like this. This is the dumbing of America, is what it is. And I'm not going to correspond with you. Man, sending me a check for $1.95. And then the March of Dimes yesterday with 2 quarters. What the hell's wrong with you people? Keep your money. Keep the money. Do your research. Because that's a lot of money that you're sending out in the mail to millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of people. That's a lot of money you're giving up. Don't give up all that money and then expect me to send you a donation. Next time, just be normal. If you want me to donate, you can hit me up and I can donate or not. And if I do donate, be nice about it. Say thank you. If you choose to donate again, we'd appreciate it. And then get off my ass. As I said yesterday, it's like a friend coming up to you. Can I borrow $10? Sure. Just take the $10 because you're never going to pay me back. Because people don't pay people back. That doesn't work like that. So here's $10. Just here you go. And then a week later, Ron, I'm still a little short of cash. Can I have another $10? No. Okay. I mean, a lot of you are going to disagree with me. I know you will. I've just told you up front what happened here. I think it's that, unfortunately, in our society, I'm sick of being hit up for money. I'm paying through the nose, and physically I don't know how that happens. What's that expression, I'm paying through the nose? Ew. Ew. I'm paying through my vagina. Oh, interesting, but oh. Anyway, I'm paying through the nose bills and for food and everything. We're going to talk about poverty rather soon because that's a big deal now. It always was. Now it's really. You know, so, just stop bothering me. Scams. Scams have taken over everything. Scams through the mail, scams through the internet, certainly scams through your phone, your computer, your cell phone now. I'm getting text messages saying you've won a lot of money, just contact us and we'll tell you how you can pick it up. I am now skeptical of everything. Someone comes up to me and says, Ron, you know, I really love you. My response is, no, you don't. This is a scam, isn't it? You don't love me. All right. Anyway, I'm telling you, man, it's crazy. It's crazy. I'm performing my entire life on the defense. Yeah, I am. I gotta watch out for everything. It's like little potholes all over the place, little potholes of people that want to deceive and scam. They're all over the place. Potholes of scams. It's like having a dog with diarrhea. Careful where you walk. Well, I used to be able to just walk all over the place and not be careful. Well, now you got to be careful where you walk because your dog has diarrhea. Same thing here. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't give to the charities to which you wish. Personally, when people market you for money, the marketers get over 50% of the donation, well over 50%, and a very small amount of what you're writing out on a check or donating actually goes to the cause to which you're donating. I think you know that. If you don't, you better realize that. Best thing to do is to do things directly. Okay, kids. I'm just saying. That's all I'm doing. I'm just saying. You do what you want. I'm just saying. All right, fine, good. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, there'll be more program involved here. So don't go anywhere.
The Ron Van Dam Show is made possible by generous contributions from listeners like you. Except you, Jerry. You're a turd. We're sending your money back to you. Don't ever send money here again, Jerry. You know perfectly well why. Final warning. You haven't forgotten. We haven't forgotten, Jerry. Okay? Like $14 was gonna smooth things over with Ron. No, Jerry. Just fucking no. We will send people to your house. For everyone who's not Jerry, thank you. And we return you to the Ron Van Dam Show. Turn off the podcast, Jerry. We mean it.
Tammy Thompson joins us now. She's a poverty expert, national speaker, and creator of The Psychology of Poverty. I like that title. The psychology of anything is kind of interesting to me. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm also very intrigued by the psychology of everything.
Yes. Well, it's true. You dig a little deeper and you go, ooh, that's interesting. I did not know
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I think people are being really, really interested when you start digging deeper into poverty. This is one of the things that really excites me, especially because I'm sort of healing from my own experiences and my own journey out of poverty and, you know, trying to get to the root of a lot of my decision making and why I feel like I feel was really important to me.
It's very interesting and difficult for people who aren't in any given situation to understand what that given situation is like. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to expect people to put themselves in that place if they weren't there. But give me some numbers. I understand that obviously there's poverty, but the numbers are quite staggering.
Well, the numbers are staggering. And, you know, according to the Census Bureau, about 38 38 million people are living in poverty. 38 million. 56% of those are women. And when we think about that, you know, when you think about women in poverty, it's most likely that there are also children in poverty when women are in poverty.
Yeah.
And that's been true throughout my lifetime, you know, and I don't think that we're putting enough emphasis on how much we're thinking about what long-term exposure to poverty is doing to people mentally and emotionally. And that has always been a bigger impact for me, even more so than the financial impact, because the financial impact you can solve by getting people more money, right? People get better jobs or people get windfalls of money, and that heals the financial aspect, but the emotional and psychological impacts can be long lasting.
I want to try to make a comparison. Tell me if you think this is accurate. I didn't live through the Depression. I'm not that old, but but I know that parents of generation did, and I've noticed that even though we're not going through a Depression now, there's an entire generation that lives like they're still going through it with their values and such, never being comfortable enough, knowing that can you know. Is that what we're talking about? Even though you're not on the same boat, you're always in the boat?
Well, I think you are making some very good points, and absolutely that does have some impact. And we do talk to people, older people, who have been through the Depression, and there are definitely some parallels, because the parallel, really the common denominator, is not having access to your most basic needs.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about not having access to your most basic needs on an ongoing basis, you have to really think about what that is doing to the human psyche. So if you've never experienced poverty firsthand, it's understandable that you wouldn't understand.
Yes.
But even, you know, let's say you miss a meal or you go, you know, some hours beyond your normal meal time, and think about what that feels like for you. You know, it's hard to concentrate. Yes. It's hard. You're like, I'm thinking about, what am I going to eat? Mm. Imagine that. Every day, every single day, while you're trying to get through your normal functions of life and not knowing where your next meal is coming from, or not knowing, you know, whether or not you're going to have a roof over your head tomorrow. These are things that can really, really impact how people move through society. And so that's why focusing on this piece of it is so important to me, because I think it's really at the root of a lot of our other challenges. I think it's at the root of our crime rate. I think it's at the root of our drug and alcohol abuse rate.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's at the root of our domestic violence rate. I think a lot of the challenges that we're seeing in our society are directly connected to the emotional and psychological impact of long-term exposure to poverty.
True. Just for a second to go to the other side of the coin, incredibly well-off people who had the silver spoons born in their mouth are not good people.
You're right.
They are actually like horrible human beings. So, I mean, that can also be, of course, they're not struggling, but they're so entitled that they're just like ruining everything.
Right. But a lot of those folks, and we're not going to generalize and say everybody with a lot of money are bad people, like, everybody who's in poverty aren't bad people.
Right.
But if you really think about it, we're still talking about money and what it does and how access to it can change how you view the world, right? And your space in the world. And a lot of those bad people with a lot of money are bad because they're focusing on how to keep their money. So money and how we view money and our relationship with money impacts a lot of our decision making. And it definitely does have an impact on how we view ourselves, how we view others, how we see ourselves moving throughout society.
I mean, you mentioned before the struggle of an individual in poverty, not knowing where their next meal is coming from, etc. And then you multiply that by the fact that they have a family and they have to fend for the children and other family members that's like, I don't know. I can't even.
It's very overwhelming. It's a very heavy weight to carry. And it sort of sits in you like a pit. It sits in you like a rock in your stomach. The stress, like there's health implications associated with worrying about money. The stress is weighing on us physically as well as mentally. So constantly having to worry and worrying about where your next basic needs are coming from does definitely have an impact. Yeah. But another way that it has an impact is it has a way of throwing us into survival mode. And in survival mode, it is very difficult to think about long-term planning to get to thriving, right? Even to develop a good budget, you have to be able to think at least 30 days into the future. And sometimes being in survival mode only allows you to think from day to day. I got to just get through today, focus on today, survive today, and I'll worry about tomorrow. And that thinking is keeping people in poverty much longer than they have to be, because you have to have the mental bandwidth to plan your next steps, which is why, you know, most of us, if you've gone to college or you're in high school, people will ask, what's your 5-year plan? What's your 5-year plan? Because there's some planning required to reach a certain level of financial success. But the poverty brain really struggles to think beyond the current moment. Right? Some people can think from, okay, my next paycheck, when's my next paycheck? But it can really be restricting, and it can also cause us to miss opportunities that can get us to the next level.
Oh, there's no question. It's like survival on an island. You don't think about how am I going to get off the island. You think about how am I going to survive the night.
How am I going to survive? Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
I worry about getting off the island later. I have to still be alive in order to do that.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's a great analogy.
Let's talk about women in poverty. I know there's some interesting percentages there.
Yeah, well, you know, women women have been getting the short end of the stick in the economy for a very long time. You know, I think people forget that women just recently, and I'm saying recently because I'm 52 years old, it was in my lifetime that women were even allowed to apply for credit on their own. You know, in the 70s, women still had to get their husband to co-sign on a loan in order to qualify. So women are really behind the eight ball in building a financial stronghold. We've been getting paid less than men forever. We still have not necessarily caught up in all areas. And women also, you know, we made a shift from being home, being stay-at-home moms, being women who took care of the household while a spouse took care of us or a father took care of us. And now that we're out in the world, I don't know if society has necessarily fully adjusted to women being outside the home.
Not at all.
No, and I think we are seeing it now with this pandemic. I think it's really shaking people up to see that women are very important forces in our economy. And when women cannot go out and produce and cannot go out and work, it impacts the family, it impacts our communities, and it impacts our society. And it's definitely impacting our economy. So focusing on ways to make it easier for women to leave the home to work, I think is very important. I think women have to be focusing on ways to bring themselves higher up in the food chain and in our corporate situations and our work environments. We've got to do some self-assessment and figure out what talents, what skills do we have that we can either turn into a business, which is some of the work that we do at my nonprofit. Is we really focus on helping women identify their natural strengths and talents that they have as moms and caretakers and nurturers, and how do you turn that into an income? So working with women to help them recognize their strengths for entrepreneurship is one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, Tammy, two things scare me. When I was growing up, my mother was a quote-unquote housewife, is a weird term, but my father, you know, had the occupation, made the living, and we existed very well on that. You can't do that, and you just can't.
You
need
do it
two incomes. That in itself is a scary development that we've been living with, but that was a total game changer. The other is that what do you do with the children? How do you go out and have an occupation career? You need some type of a child care situation in this country so that they are free to go and pursue. These are two very scary things. I know that you talk about this and you're a national speaker, and there are resolves to this, and you do help people recognize some of these possible resolves.
Well, we have to focus on, and I think as a society and you know, from our governmental perspective even, we have to get really serious about making sure that families even feel safe enough to go out into the workforce. Right. And because our child care situation in this country is dismal.
Very dismal.
There's not enough quality child care. When we talk about quality, we're talking about safety. We're talking about nurturing. We're talking about making it so that folks can go to work and not have to worry about whether or not their children are being taken care of.
Yeah, or even if they can afford, they work and every penny goes to the child care. It makes no sense.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So, you know, getting to a point where we're investing in our child care infrastructure is really important. I think a big portion of that should be subsidized by the government.
Yeah.
I know people don't agree with me, but when you think about the return on that investment, it's a return on an investment. That's how we have to look at it. Investing heavily into pre-K and child care is an investment for our country. You know, it's so many things that ways that we can benefit from that. We can get more people into the workforce, increasing our tax base, but also investing in the children. And that first 3 years of life for children is so important, and says a lot about their success as they continue in their educational journey. And not having that is detrimental to us. And I think we're seeing that. We're seeing that in our schools. We're seeing it in our communities, that when we aren't investing in women and children, we are negating a great return on investment for this country.
Oh, absolutely. And the economy will be that much better off because there's more occupations, more people working, more spendable money, and the economy starts booming. So it just makes sense. But we don't do everything that makes sense all the time.
No, we don't.
Or it takes generations to get there.
Yeah, it does. And this is one that's really surprising to me, because this has been, you know, I raised all of my children, and I now am actually raising a granddaughter. And it's been two generations that I've seen that we haven't done really well in this space. And so we've got to get to work. We've got to be really intentional about finding some solutions, because these are multi-pronged issues that we're talking about. This is not just that when we say, oh, well, we're just talking about women. Well, maybe if they just stayed home or made better decisions. We're way past that conversation. We have to find some solutions. We are not in an economy where women, trust me, would love to stay home and be with their children and not have to worry about going out into the workforce. But that's not the case. So we have to do it, and we have to make it safer for people to do it. We have to also be paying our child care workers. I mean, it amazes me that child care workers are, in a lot of cases, making minimum wage to take care of our most precious commodity. I mean, children, for God's sakes. And we're not making sure that those child care providers are being taken care of either. And these are the types of investments that we have to make as a country.
Fascinating stuff. Now, how can people get more information? I'm sure that there are a lot of listeners who say, well, I'd love to learn more about some resolves and possibilities.
Yes, I can get. So we have two websites, one for my personal business, which is T3 Consulting. I consult all around the country, helping people get a better understanding of how the psychology of poverty works, because I think that's really the root for how we're going to help move people forward. And you can find me there at www.tannygthompson.com. You can also check out my nonprofit that I founded that helps empower folks to become asset builders and wealth builders and escape the trap of poverty through home ownership and entrepreneurship. And you can find us there at www.catapultpittsburgh.org.
Perfect. Tammy, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, and I
thank
you.
Such a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you. I enjoyed your conversation. You were awesome.
No, you're doing a wonderful thing, and continued progress to you. Well, that'll do it for me today. Interesting program, I think. I would listen to it. I'll be back again on Monday. President's Day? Seriously? Come on. Do we have to do this? I guess so. I'll be back again on Monday with a brand new show, but until that time arrives, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I wish you peace.